Hey, welcome everybody. This is the State of the CIO, where we talk with America's top IT leaders about the changing role of technology in the C-suite. I'm your host, Dan Kelly.
Hey everybody, Dan Kelly here with State of the CIO podcast. Hope everyone's having a great day. Today we've got a great guest with us. His name is Mo Sehgal. He's the managing principal and the head of data engineering at EKI Digital. Hey Mo.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. With all the nonsense happening in life, nothing really to complain about. So hopefully the same with you.
Yes, thank you.
Mo, you are down in California, correct?
That's right, San Francisco.
And, you know, I hear you know a thing or two about business intelligence and data warehousing. Is that right?
Just a little, yes.
A little. Could you give the audience an introduction, perhaps, of your career journey and specifically, you know, how you got into this space?
Yeah, certainly. So, excuse the funny accent, born in the UK, grew up in London and then moved here about 35 years ago. Actually, data has been part of my DNA for a long time, all the way from my bachelor's degree. I actually went to the University of Maryland and studied with some very specific professors that were doing some formative work around database platforms and a lot of what we see today that we call database machines that have suddenly turned into AI and no-code platforms is what I worked with on paper and pencil trying to prove these mathematical models of all these machines. Now suddenly it's become real. So the journey has been phenomenal from an education and career perspective. But to summarize things, I spent about 20 years with Accenture, was a partner there. Then I was a partner at several other firms, including Capco, capital markets company, and then IBM, and then an executive director at Ernst & Young, and then now leading state engineering practice at EKI Digital.
And so you've always been on the consulting side, right, Mo?
Yes, and really, it's been a phenomenal career. I've been privileged and truly blessed to have worked with some of the largest companies in the world. So yeah, it's been a phenomenal journey for me.
Yeah. One of the great things about the consulting space, for obvious reasons, is you get to see problems and opportunities in multiple companies, multiple industries. I'm curious, just to kick off our discussion, are you seeing any common problems that span across all industries as far as where people's lack of understanding of what they can really do around the term of business intelligence, especially in light of the crazy happenings in the world today?
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting over this 25, 30 year journey. Data is still not being used as effectively as it could be. The same old problems of co-location and integration, those two aspects, bringing the data together and then being able to find insight over that data set, continues to be a major challenge for most organizations. And while technology has advanced significantly to reduce time to market, those two fundamental dimensions of bringing the data together, because distributed query is still not a reality that we find prevalent in the market, and then being able to mine that data for operational insight is still proving to be a big challenge for many organizations.
What is the biggest opportunity, you think, when you're looking at all industries, all businesses that you've worked with? Are you seeing some common quick wins that you're like, why didn't the business address this before hiring us? Or sometimes even maybe the CIO or the IT leadership inside of companies know that they have an opportunity, but they just needed another third party to tell them. Are you seeing any sort of trends there? And I ask that question because our audience is primarily CIOs and IT leadership. I can hear them asking me, what should I look for inside of my company? Just, you know, two or three quick questions or inquiries internally. Are we doing a good job? So if you could just maybe explain some of these quick wins that you're finding inside of other companies.
Yeah, in fact, there's one that stands out, is to change the game. And what I mean by that is today, most organizations face challenges in sourcing the data. And a good portion of time and effort is spent just on that, 80%, if not more. There are many new technologies that change that equation, reducing that 80% down to 10% or 20%. And when that happens, that is truly a game changer. And so what that means is 80% of the time can be spent on analyzing the data and not on gathering, collecting it, and integrating it and co-locating it. And there are many such technologies that exist today. I think the other aspect of this is that insufficient time is spent on understanding the consumption aspects, so all the reporting and analytics. So if you can change the game to significantly reduce the co-location integration and substantially increase the opportunities to have more insightful analytics that are automatically mining and orchestrating discerning patterns in the data, then that is truly a shift in how data operations is performed today, thus giving the business and others more insight over the data in a more timely and effective manner.
Right. Yeah. And when you enter into a client, are you generally validating that they're leveraging their own in-house data most effectively against their use cases? Or do you find that clients have use cases sitting in front of them, but they're not executing upon them?
I would say it's a combination. In general, though, you'd be surprised how much business today is still operating on gut reaction. I was working with one large higher ed institution. In fact, they're one of the largest privately held university systems in the country. And they were pretty clear from day one, minute one, that they do not trust the data. And that is a huge wow factor, right? With everything going on in higher ed, cost of education, cost per student increasing, greater insight over how to improve student engagement, faculty performance, other operational metrics, and reduce withdrawals and increase attention, grow. One would think that data, right, just based on those metrics alone would be top of mind. But it was very interesting to hear key stakeholders just sort of invalidate that assumption that you or I might have made.
I couldn't help it. I have a lot of professor friends. A few used to be my professors back in college, university, around the world, et cetera. But I just have to make this slight tangent comment for a second. The real good ones understand that the data should speak for itself, right? But the overall concept of professors is nobody knows better than me. It's almost kind of like the doctor complex. You know what I mean? I don't care what the screen is telling me. I know better than this because I'm the professor. Without picking on the academia anymore, even though I could for a bit here, it's probably similar in private sector as well. They have preconceived notions of what they believe is true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I spent a good portion of my career, first 15 years was in supply chain, so heavy manufacturing, nickel and copper manufacturing, gold mining, et cetera. And then the last 15 years, relatively recently, I suppose, in banking and financial services, yes. And all of these industries continue to have major challenges, huge regulatory pressures, constantly changing systems, constantly changing business models, organizational shifts, et cetera. And as a result of that, data is in a multitude of systems and platforms and technologies and vendors. And so the problem is not simple. But again, there are techniques and there are strategies to avoid having these infrastructures be unwieldy, ineffective, cost. And so understanding how best to utilize the right types of technologies to change the game, right? To reduce the cost of sourcing the data and to dramatically increase the opportunities for analytics and business intelligence can really be a game changer for these organizations.
You know, as you've been describing this, I automatically think of like an enterprise architecture strategy. And even some of the biggest companies in the world that I, you know, work with as a consultant and my team works with, it's still a lot of patchwork between what is essentially technical debt versus true new enterprise architecture platforms. I'm wondering if you're seeing the same here, and maybe if you'd be willing to share one or two strategies or maybe even success stories that you've experienced in your career, maybe in the last 10 years or so, as you move companies out of this kind of patchwork, scattered castle approach, I call it. That's my term, not an official term, but I think you know what it means, versus kind of a cohesive strategy. Could you speak to how you've transformed maybe a client or how other clients have transformed themselves using a couple of key steps?
Yes. In most cases, there's a common theme, and it starts really with understanding the consumption aspects of the data. So understanding who those stakeholders are, what information requirements they need, and then driving that back to what data is actually required to solve the problem. And it's interesting when you do that, it sounds like a very simple concept, but it's often very difficult to enact in most organizations. But for example, at one of the world's largest chemical companies, we set up a rapid SWAT team that looked at specific logistic problems across the globe. So shipping chemicals and making sure that the chemicals were in the right container, on the right truck, or train or whatever mode of transportation was required, that the right documentation was available, that shipping labels, et cetera, were all correct, tax information and so on, was very difficult for that organization to obtain that data, store it in a place that was useful, and then generate insight to specific black belts and other individuals involved in the supply chain to analyze. And we set up a program with just a few individuals that sourced the data, quickly structured it in such a manner based on their KPIs or key performance indicators that were being requested, and then rapidly iterated through that process in order to make sure that the data was actually the right data, that it was in the quality of the data was in a manner that it could be consumed, and then there were reports or insights that could be generated as a result for people to make key decisions. And literally, as fast as I said that, we were able to accomplish many of these skilled with advanced tools, SWOT-like projects, in a very iterative, incremental manner. And as a result of that, we were able to solve dozens of problems in a very short period of time. You know, these are difficult but winning strategies, particularly when business is unable to make timely and effective decisions.
Yeah, that's really insightful. You know, I keep hearing this theme of it continues to be a data integrity issue of having the data to be able to be consumed by whatever tool or case study. Is that accurate?
It is, in fact. I was working with one of the largest aeronautics manufacturers in the U.S. Yeah. All of the tax codes in SAP were blank.
It doesn't surprise me. Yeah. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You're shipping product from, I don't know, Nevada to South Africa. How do you calculate the tax consequences of the shipment? How are you complying with regulations, et cetera? That was a mystery to everybody. So clearly there was a tax consequence, but how was it being calculated? From where was it being calculated? Was a mystery.
Yeah. So that's an enhancement opportunity from a business process optimization standpoint without throwing out too many buzzwords, right? But I'm also thinking about end user experience stuff, right? So that's kind of back office, extremely important, right? And it can be a mess to untangle if it's better with. Thinking about more of kind of the front office as well, end user experience. Maybe could you talk to me a little bit about opportunities companies might be able to think about, you know, from an end user experience perspective?
Yeah, when I think about the end user experience, I think about the visualizations that are used to discern patterns and insight from the data. And that enriches the consumer's experience to want to know more, right? And by knowing more, we can do more, right? We make more effective decisions and so on. One of the interesting things is still there is a tremendous lack of understanding of what types of visualizations should be used for certain types of quantitative information. And there are a number of studies and books that have been published on this very topic. And it's so surprising still to see so many different, very interesting widgets like barometers and other dials and so on being used for reporting very important quantitative statistics. And I think this is a big problem. There's just a lack of understanding of the underlying statistical nature of the data itself, the use of the correct type of visualization to analyze that information, and then more importantly, to identify exceptions in the data such that it leads to action. And without those three things, in particular, the last one, is the information actually going to lead to an action? That is a huge gap in the customer experience, which is why there are so many reports. I mean, you walk into any organization. I was working with one bank recently, part of the $1 trillion club, 90,000 reports. I mean, how is that possible, right? And it's very probable because there's insufficient analysis of what data is actually used to make decisions. And then when that information is presented, it's not presented in a manner that can invoke actions.
I think that's one of the primary reasons that business people, not necessarily IT people, have a hard time understanding what really business intelligence can do for you. They can't bring it to an end action of what does it mean for me type of thing. So I think what you just shared there is a great insight.
Yeah. The biggest thing that we see are these inappropriate use of various dials that look interesting but have no meaning. The second is trends, right? This is the bane of existence of the vast majority of reporting that I see. It's a trend. What we need to identify in the trend are what are the exceptions to the trend that actually would cause somebody to act upon that exception. There are some threshold at which, above which, below which is a problem. And establishing those exceptions or creating a trend of the exceptions would be a lot more insightful than just some trends. So, yeah, I think that there's a huge opportunity here that is being overlooked.
Are you seeing more opportunity in one industry versus another? I'm just curious.
No, in fact, it's a good question. I'm seeing it across the board. I think, you know, we're working with a debt consolidator here in the Bay Area. So this is an organization that considers itself a thought leader in the industry. They are doing exceptionally well. They have very small employee footprint, but they have 500 systems. Wow. There's approximately 2.2 systems per person. And I'm using system in the most generic form here, right? It could be an Excel spreadsheet that somebody uses to make decisions, or it could be somebody had budget somewhere and bought something on a credit card and installed it and configured it, is now using that to make decisions. I mean, it's phenomenal, just the complexity that can arise very quickly without, you know, proper controls. But they realize that this is clearly not a good business model. So now the question is, okay, we've got data in these 500 systems. What exactly are we going to do? And how are we going to do it? And how can we do it tomorrow and not 3 months from now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. You know, as you were talking about the employee count, a thought just came to my mind from a resourcing perspective, right? So if I'm the CIO listening to this and I think about, you know, we've got two or three projects happening that are supposed to be game changers, then we got kind of the business as usual stuff. Where do I find all the people to work on this? I'm wondering what you found has worked best. And I realize there's not one size fits all, but just the overall trends that you've seen work the best for resourcing, whether in-house versus external help. Can you talk to that a little bit? Because I don't think one or the other side of the spectrum is probably a good idea for almost any business. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And naturally, one size doesn't fit all. But the reality is small, nimble teams can move faster. So having the right individuals skilled with advanced tools can make a huge difference in shorter periods of time. And I think that that's sort of just a leading principle I would have going into this, that less is more. And we can always add. There's always opportunities to increase team size. But starting small, thinking big, scaling fast is a true, tried, trusted approach to managing these types of projects. That way they don't become unwieldy so fast, right? And we spend more time organizing the team and focusing the direction of the work. We spend more time on the team actually producing results and demonstrating the value in shorter periods of time.
Now, do you see that? Because I always think about it as build and run in almost any project. Do you see the build team transitioning over to run, or how does that usually work when you think about from a sustainment of once you have a project up and running, producing value? How do you generally change over those resources, or do you keep them consistent?
So again, every organization is different. I think the key word there, though, is development coordination, which is a continuous activity throughout the cycle. So one key measure could be, as we're thinking about the chunks of work or sprints or units of work that can be transitioned to a run type of environment, and the faster that can be done and the integrity of that process such that it's seamless and that there's no process breaks in between, I think is very important to understand and to study. And again, every organization is different, but what it speaks to is having the end in mind at the beginning of the project, recognizing that this is going to result in some data ops changes and introduction of new capabilities. And so starting with that notion and then working backwards to assure that the product that is delivered can be transitioned easily and seamlessly without friction is definitely something to consider at the beginning, not at the end.
Right. Sounds good. I want to hop into one of our standard questions here, because obviously you have a wealth of knowledge and experience. You know, I'm wondering if you could speak to yourself maybe 20 years ago or so at the beginning of your career. I don't want to choose it for you, but you pick the number. But essentially at the beginning of your career, and you could give yourself some advice on how to accelerate your career in the most meaningful way, what would have that advice been?
I think the one thing that stands out for me and I yearn for is focus. If I could have chosen an industry to really specialize in, I think that would have been an interesting path. So I really have a passion for numbers and finance. And I think if I had my druthers, I would have chosen a path along those lines. So I have no regrets, but the question is, what would I have done differently? I would have picked an industry and specialized in that. And I think that clients today appreciate the depth of knowledge of the industry and the dynamics, the marketplace, the customers, the regulations, et cetera, whatever comprises that industry. They appreciate that depth of knowledge because it shapes solutions, right? It shapes ideas, it shapes solutions. And having been there and done that in that industry gives you credibility to speak to those situations.
That's really valuable insight. I can relate to that specifically as well. Yeah. And I'm curious specifically on the shaping of the industry. Like the financial services industry is clearly one in which has its own culture. Agriculture has its own culture. They all have a cultural element to them as well. Not only just the use cases, but specifically the people and kind of how they think about things. So the financial services seems to be your favorite so far. And that's what you're working in now, right? Primarily?
Absolutely. Yes. Like I said, I do have a lot of supply chain experience, but I do enjoy working in banking and capital markets. And I just find the rate or pace of change fascinating. And there's constantly new regulations. There's constantly new requirements. And I find that industry constantly evolving in terms of how it's being positioned and what it's doing for its customers. And so that's of particular interest to me.
I can relate. Yeah, even from an IT sourcing and negotiation standpoint, yeah, it really helps become niche. You almost have to become a specialist. Becoming a generalist really does nothing for you. So yeah, that makes perfect sense. All right, second question. Tell me your favorite worst boss story of your career.
Well, I do actually have one, and it was a life-changing experience for me. This is a long time ago. I was working at Arthur Andersen and Company, and I was working for a partner, and I thought I was doing a good job. I was a senior manager. I was running this large project and providing my status reports, and I thought everything was going well. And then one day he invited me into his office and he was quite annoyed. And I learned many years later for good reasons. But one of the things he said to me is that a good leader is always thinking about the three next steps. And I have never forgotten those words. A good leader is always thinking about the next three steps. I think what fascinated me really about the point was, one, he had quantified it for me, right? Which I thought was fascinating because I'm a numbers guy, right? So there was an instruction to help me put a metric, a pace of my thinking for the future.
Yeah.
And I thought while I felt like one inch above the ground when he told me that, I realized over the many years how instructive that simple sentence has been in my life. Just think ahead. It's not always just the next one thing that you need to think ahead about, but just how far ahead should you be thinking? And for me now, that's always three. So that was a wow. I didn't know whether to hate him or to love him at that point.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. But the point is you took what aggravated you at the time and held on to it, and you used something for positive for your career, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, hey, Mo, this has been a great conversation. One thing I would also ask just quickly is, when you're thinking about resourcing and you're thinking about standing up a team, where would you fit this capability inside of your team if you were the CIO? Would this be in the enterprise information management space? Would you stand up a new separate team completely that reports directly to the CIO? Would you have it reporting to an enterprise architecture team? Where would you put this capability? Would it be part of a vertical or would you make it more of a horizontal? I think I know your answer is going to be the latter, but can I maybe talk through that a little bit? Because this one question comes up a lot in my casual conversations. Obviously, I'm not an expert in this at all, but I simply work with these people who are experts like you on their supplier contracts. So this is always a topic that comes up of where do we fit this capability into the company? So maybe could you speak to that just as our final thoughts here?
Yeah. I do believe, first, it is an enterprise capability. And then secondly, I think there are two key stakeholders in any organization. So the presumption here is that the vast majority, if not all of the organizations that we're working with, are in the business to make money. So that's a fundamental, right? So if that's true, the real stakeholder is the CFO. He's the guy with the purse strings. He's the guy who's talking. Well, most of these companies are public companies. He's the guy that has to defend the financials. So it is all about money. And so there's clearly two key stakeholders. They're the CFO and the CIO. And there's a balance to that. The CIO has to make sure that whatever is done appropriately according to infrastructure and security and technology standards. But it's for the CFO, whose agenda is to make the company profitable over time to achieve his goals. So that's how I would answer the question. And I think oftentimes these types of programs are buried under many layers of organization that it's hard to pull them out such that they have visibility into what really keeps their C-level suite up at night and what worries them about answering to their customers and shareholders.
Essentially, you're saying elevate the function to the CFO as much as possible.
Yes.
Wherever that makes sense. Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for your time today, Mo. This was a great conversation. And hey, if people want to get a hold of you, what would be the most effective way for them to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. The EKI digital website is probably the fastest way to get a hold of me, and just leave a message there and it'll get routed to me and I can respond instantly.
Cool. Sounds good. Are you on LinkedIn too, I assume?
Yes, absolutely.
Got it. Yeah, we'll put those in the show notes as well. So cool. Well, thank you very much, Mo, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure.
Hey, everyone, if you enjoyed today's episode, feel free to provide me some feedback and or subscribe via iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. So until next time, hope you're having a great day.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you got value from today's conversation, please share this podcast with one person you think who would enjoy it. For show notes, episodes, and more, please visit thenegotiator.guru. Look forward to hearing from everyone soon. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.